Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, D.A., I'm thirsty, man. Could you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, D.A., what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
D.A., what's the dealio? Permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, D.A.? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. These are challenging times. Rocket Mortgage is prepared to help. If you need mortgage assistance, contact their team 24/7. RocketMortgage.com. They're home to yours. The team at Rocket Mortgage is with you. Thanks for being with us, everybody. Memorial Day is here, a moment to remember those who we have lost to the ultimate sacrifice. Our thanks to the families that have lost loved ones, and our thoughts and prayers with them today on Memorial Day. Coming up on the show in 15 minutes, young Connor Green is next up with this best team ever segment. The 2010 New York Jets, who memorably went to Foxborough and knocked off the one-seeded New England Patriots. They were 14-2 that year, the Patriots were. Jets went in there as the wild card and knocked them off. That was the Bart Scott can't wait game. He's going to talk to Mike DeVito, one of the best pass rushers, part of that esteemed defense of the 2010 Jets under the Rex Ryan era, coming up here in 15 minutes from now. So we'll do that as best team ever continues. Also in 40 minutes, this date in mothership history. A couple of nuggets here. Number one, I checked on the wide world of sports. If the NBA does come back to play, it looked like they're going to do so at Disney World's Wide World of Sports Complex. If they do that as kind of a campus environment, having the players and their families able to kind of live in and around Disney for a couple of months, it looks like they have three different facilities that could house those NBA games. They have something called the Arena, which they can open that thing up as an indoor venue for multiple different sports. They also have the HP Fieldhouse, which can seat up to 5,000 people. Of course, they won't need that. And is also the home to the televised Orlando Invitational, which can also be used for basketball, volleyball, gymnastics, and other events. And then also the Visa Athletic Center, which also can house sports like indoor basketball, volleyball, and more. So it sounds like they have three different facilities that all are large enough to have access for TV crews and broadcast, because that's the one thing. You can play them at gyms, these games, if there's no fans. But you do need, if it's going to be a televised event, you do need space for TV trucks and all those types of cameras and things like that. So those are the three places Wide World of Sports has for basketball events, seemingly, just by a check of their website. So one thing I want to get to here is this virtual ring ceremony by the Washington Nationals. This was an idea that they had that, because there's no games, of course, being played, instead of waiting for the games to be played, or maybe waiting for the games not to be played, the Nats were going to hold a virtual ring ceremony online. And when I first heard this, I was like, I don't think that's a great idea. I don't think it's a great idea because It feels totally anticlimactic. I mean, you have no fans in attendance. You have no crowd. You have no banner raising. You have no nothing. I mean, to me, to just have a Zoom conference call where everybody opens up their ring and shows it to the camera, shows it to their laptop, seems really lame. And I don't know, to me, winning a World Series is so significant. It is such an important moment in these guys' lives and professional careers. Then why not just wait? What's the rush here? That I don't understand the rush. You can send the rings to all of these guys so that they have them. That's fine. But in terms of a ceremony, why not just wait? I mean, I don't know. You can wait until you're back playing baseball. That's fine. There's not going to be fans in attendance, but at least you're all together, physically together. That's, I think, better than being in your living room or being in your office and just looking into your laptop. Or just wait until, I guess you can't wait until next year because then there's a championship already that would also share. But, I mean, I don't know. I just thought that the Zoom teleconference as a ceremony was a bad idea. It felt so hollow. I mean, so you're Steven Strasburg or, you know, you're any of these guys that have worked their entire careers for this moment and you finally win a World Series and your ceremony is going to be a Zoom conference? I mean, you can't even be around your other teammates for this? I think all of that was just a bad idea anyway. And so the Nats scrapped that idea and they unveiled their ring and you heard Bogish mention how many diamonds that they had in it. But instead, they're going to wait to do it in person. Thankfully, I don't know whose idea this was to not at least be together during it. Okay, so wait until if you're playing baseball this year, you can do it in August, I suppose, do it in September. Maybe wait until the postseason or whatever if you make the play. I don't know if you think you're going to make the playoffs. But a ring ceremony in front of nobody, with nobody together to celebrate. I mean, the guys can't even have a beer together. To me, was always a terrible idea. And why rush this? Who in Nats land right now? What Nats fan is like, you know what I want? I want a ring ceremony. Come on. Where is this? I want to log on and see a bad video feed of 40 guys getting jewelry. That's what I want to see. I thought it was unnecessary, and I'm glad they decided to. I wonder who finally called it off, but I'm glad they decided to stop and wait until they're all together. Give them their rings now, fine, but let's have a ceremony when you can actually have a ceremony. You know, it's not going to be that long until we actually have these guys together, and if the entire season's wiped out, you wait until opening day 2021. Yes, it's a long ways away, but wouldn't you rather celebrate with your guys, with your teammates, and with fans than sitting in your office looking into your laptop? This to me was a no-brainer, so I'm glad they decided to do so. Whereas I always thought this was a stupid idea.
So it is, but it isn't at the same time. I'm going to kind of go half in the water here. Number one, I think if they're going to do it, they should wait till next year anyway. Originally, I thought that was stupid, but because another champion would be crowned. But if you're going to do it in person with all your guys, the fans should be a part of that. And I think that's what the virtual would have provided. At least the fans could watch it. So I think doing it without fans in the stadium later on in August, to me, is even more hollow. I think at this point, you might as well wait for the fans. The argument,
well, at least you're together, though.
Right.
I mean, doing it at your house on Zoom, to me, is worse than at least being at a ballpark, maybe even your own ballpark, together with other guys.
So here's the counter argument to that, and this is something that a lot of people are struggling with in the country right now, is how many kids are graduating high school virtually? All their ceremonies right now, DA, are being held on Zoom.
Right.
With principals and administrators reading names off.
Yeah.
And they're basically sitting with their friends in a couch, like, you know, it was the virtual NFL draft or the virtual ring ceremony. And you can make the – I know that's kind of apples and oranges, but it really isn't. These people were all together. They're not getting to do it with their classmates. If the Nats have this ring ceremony virtually, the counter argument is they're kind of in this with the rest of America with the – you know, the graduations that everybody knows somebody that has to do this right now. And it's kind of like, hey, if we could do this, you guys could do this. Because this is a really tough moment for a lot of kids who worked 18 years to graduate high school, growing up with their friends, and can't spend time with them graduating high school. So I know that's not on everybody's forefront if you're not a part of it, but the Nats doing that would have been a sign to all these kids who don't want to do this right now with graduation. Like, all right, if a professional baseball team who we look up to can do it, we could get through this as well. And the Nats pushing this back is another sign for a lot of these kids right now, like, well, wait a minute, they could push it back. Why don't we just wait a year at this point or wait till September to have the ceremony and just give us our diplomas?
Well, I think for a couple of reasons. I think we're all very sympathetic towards the graduating class of 2020. I mean, I've spoken to kids at Syracuse that I've worked with over the last couple of years. They've been students about this, and it's very, very difficult.
So
I have, you know, graduating high school kids as well within my family and friend circle, and it really does suck. And
yeah,
I have a ton of sympathy for them. But the Nationals aren't responsible for the fact that high school kids can't graduate.
I agree with that.
The Nationals are also, we think, 90% are going to be together in a month or two. So they only have to wait a couple of months to do this. The high school kids don't get to come back to high school next September. So there are no opportunities for another ceremony. And if the high school graduating class of 2020 or the college graduating class of 2020 wanted to come back in September or October because it was safe to do so and wanted a ceremony, they would deserve a ceremony. And I would absolutely say have a ceremony.
Yes.
But the Nationals, by all intents and purposes, we're going to have a baseball season. We'll be together in six weeks. So I don't think it's up to them to do what graduating classes are doing. Number one, they're not graduating high school. Number two, they'll be together in 6 weeks.
So I understand, and I know this is going to sound hypocritical, because I don't think the Nats should do a virtual one. My point is, I also understand where a virtual one may not be stupid, because a lot of people have to go through some kind of virtual ceremony right now that they didn't want to. But I also think, on the flip side, doing it when they're together in person, while the fans now can't take part in that, to me, feels a little hollow and a little insulting. I think if you're not going to do the virtual one, you should wait until the fans can take part in this, hopefully in 2021.
Well, but if you're a fan, I'm a hardcore Nat fan, and I'm watching my ring ceremony as part of a Zoom, or I'm watching my ring ceremony on TV with at least my 25 guys that wanted, or most of them, at least together, hugging one another, all on a television at a baseball ballpark. To me, it's far more satisfying, even if there's no fans, to see my guys together at a baseball stadium versus, you know, wearing their hoodies at home inside their office.
Is it, though, in front of an empty stadium where you can't even cheer them? Is that any more satisfying? It's more satisfying if you could be one of the 40,000 in the park in Nats Park to have happen.
But that's only a percentage of the people that would be able to be there anyway. I mean,
we're gonna fake crowd noise into a ring ceremony. It's going to sound very hollow no matter what.
If the Yankees won the World Series last year, okay,
which they should've,
you wouldn't necessarily have been at the ballpark. You would have wanted to watch it on TV.
I wouldn't
have watched it because you weren't there.
But I would have loved if Yankee fans could be part of it, and Nats fans can be part of this if they wait.
Okay.
So wait. If you could wait them longer and not do the Zoom, you could wait till next season.
All right. So then pick a side here. Do you want them to do it now on Zoom or next April?
I think I want them to do it next April, but the number two option would be now on Zoom, giving somebody to watch. The worst option is to do it without fans in August.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is. No. Yes, it is.
The worst option is having a bunch of guys on crummy laptop cameras that can't angle it the right way, looking up at their third chin. That's the worst way.
No, the problem, DA, again, is they could have packaged this and sold this like, we're in this with you. This is what I'm talking about, the graduate class, and done it Zoom-wise. That is the second option. The worst option is to say, you know what, fans? We don't care about you. We're going to do this when we're together.
It's not that they don't care about fans. It's that that's not an option right now.
Yes, it is. The option is to wait till April next year.
All right. So, okay.
That's the number one option. That's what you should absolutely be doing.
All right. Wait until I'd have no problem if they wanted to do that, but I don't think that waiting a year and a half to get your ring is necessarily
I'm trying to play a little devil's advocate. Let's have some fun here this morning. I'm just giving you the other point of view on why.
Okay. Well, fine.
Calling me an idiot because nostrils are being stared through in the camera. We're spicing things up here.
Zoom calls have become very uncomfortable. There's so many Zoom calls for everything, and all of them on TV look bad.
Yeah, okay, but aren't we used to it? I mean, we're watching Disney sing-alongs every Sunday night.
When we come back, Connor Green is going to have the floor. The Diaper D'Alien is going to do best team ever with the 2010 New York Jets, the can't-wait New York Jets, who went to Foxborough and won in the postseason, went to the AFC Championship game. Mike DeVito was a standout pass rusher on that squad. Connor's going to talk to him coming up here next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Good value, big upside.
He did the little sit trick, but I don't know about that. I thought he was cute, but I could see all the other handlers like, okay, we get it.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Join Michael Breed as he tees off on the top headlines of the world of golf. Watch Course Record with Michael Breed tomorrow morning, 11 Eastern, 8 Pacific, only on the CBS Sports Network.
CBS Spectacular, yeah!
Glad you're back with us. Listen to us on your phone. Use the CBS Sports app. Use the Radio.com app or Apple Music. So all last week and into this week, we are doing a series called Best Team Ever. You know, there is a team and a year that you really latched onto, that you love more than any other team, that you remember all the highlights and all of the games and where you were watching the games, and you could recite final scores and stats, etc. Well, everybody on staff has been able to identify their one team that they loved more than any other team and interview a player from that team. We hand the baton off today to our youngest staff member here. He's a high riser. We love him here on the show. He's been an integral part of the family, and he grew up as a huge New York Jets fan. And so the squad from 10 years ago that went to New England and beat the Patriots in the Bart Scott can't wait game is on tap. Connor Green, as part of best team ever, interviewing pass rusher and part of that elite defense of the 2010 Jets, Mike DeVito. It is best team ever.
Sports fans have one team, one year, that capture us forever.
Metto behind the net, swings it in front, he's down! Metto! 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 Stephen Metto! And the Rangers have one more helmet climb, baby!
All we hear is about their defense. They can't stop a nosebleed. 25th in the league, and we don't want to get disrespectful.
This is a giant team that was referred to as the worst team ever to win the home field advantage in the National Football League.
The DA Show's best team ever. Only on CBS Sports Radio.
Connor Green joined here by Mike DeVito, former Jets defensive tackle and a member of the 2010 Jets, which is my personal favorite team of all time. Mike, thanks again so much for joining me today.
Oh, of course, Connor. Thanks for having me on, man. It's one of my favorite teams as well, so I'm excited to talk about it.
The first question I want to ask you is something I've always been curious about. So I think one of the reasons I have such a personal connection with that team is because prior to the season, you guys were on Hard Knocks, and I think that gave us a bit of a personal connection and perspective into a lot of the players on the team. It gave us more of a connection with Rex Ryan, who we already knew a little bit from him talking in the press, but I think it gave us more of a connection with individual players from you guys being on Hard Knocks. But from a player's perspective, was that something that guys on the team were excited about to be on Hard Knocks, or were guys more like bothered by the fact that they had to go through this as they're trying to get ready for the season?
No, I think guys loved it. It was a very charismatic and outgoing team. When you think of some of the guys in that locker room, it was really a team that liked the limelight, that liked to be on the spotlight. And Rex cultivated that in us as well. He wanted us to to be who we are and show our personalities. And so Hard Knocks was tailor-made for the 2010 New York Jets, and I think that's why it's one of the best versions of that series.
And another reason I think that scene was so entertaining is because Rex Ryan is not exactly a shy guy as a head coach, and he would come out and he would, you know, maybe talk a little bit of, and he'd be a little bit boisterous with the press. He said that he's not going to kiss Bill Belichick's rings when he first got hired. He guaranteed a Super Bowl before the 2010 season. And then you guys would go out and back up a lot of the talk that he had with the media. So some people think that him talking took pressure off the team, because then when you guys would maybe lose a game, all the eyes would be on him. And then some people would also say that maybe it put more pressure on you guys because a lot of teams wanted to maybe quiet Rex Ryan when they would go and play you. So do you think that him maybe being a little bit boisterous in the press took pressure off you guys, or maybe added a little bit of pressure on you?
I'm sure there were times that it did both. But I understand Rex's philosophy and what he was going for there. I think the... You know, when I think back about it, the thing I enjoyed the most about that philosophy, or one of the things I respected the most about it, is it's what every team is saying behind the scenes, right? The things we put forward to the media when Rex was our coach wasn't anything that we weren't talking about, as, you know, when I was on different teams. It was just we kept it in-house. I liked it because it was just real. You know, we didn't care to call you out. We didn't care to tell you how we felt. And we were able to back it up on the field. And so when you can, when, you know, we can do that, when your play can stand behind your words, obviously that's important. You don't want to be talking crap and then not be able to back it up.
Right.
But I liked it because it wasn't a facade. You know, it wasn't fake. It wasn't, we weren't trying to show what we weren't. We were going to, you know, be who we were and say how we felt. And it's a lot of fun to play on a team like that.
And going into that year, you guys had a lot of veteran players like Jason Taylor, LaDainian Tomlinson, Tony Richardson, guys that you felt were making their last big push for a Super Bowl, and guys that you felt were brought on for the sole purpose of winning a Super Bowl. Was there a mentality around that team that it was, to a certain degree, Super Bowl or bust for that group?
Yeah, I think so, especially coming off the 2009 season with, you know, how well we did, and then you add those veteran leaders. I think so. I think it was a Super Bowl or bust year, and I think it was a year that we could have won it. But I mean, we had all the pieces that you need for a team to excel, right, to be successful. We had incredible talent. You know, when you look at the Pro Bowl rosters, they were all Jets players. And so that team was really, top to bottom, one of the best rosters that I've been on. And, you know, it was just unfortunate that we couldn't get it done. But even that said, I think outside of the Super Bowl, that win against New England in the divisional round was probably one of the best wins in Jets history. So, it was certainly Super Bowl or bust, but you can look back on it, and I do as a player, and, you know, disappointed we didn't make it all the way, but also proud of the accomplishments that we were able to get done.
So you mentioned the divisional win against the Patriots in the playoffs. I want to go back to your guys' Week 13 meeting that year on Monday Night Football. A lot of people around here were talking about this as maybe the biggest Jets regular season game of all time, and I remember it well. I was a sophomore in high school, and I was telling everybody, oh, they're going to win 100%. They'd beat them earlier in the year. No problem. You guys go into Foxborough on Monday night in prime time, and not only get beat, but you get beat 45-3. What happened in that game exactly? Because you beat them early in the year. What was the situation there where they just took it to you guys in Week 13?
Yeah, you know, I think anytime you're playing New England, you have to be playing all three phases, you know, perfect out the gate, right? I mean, everybody, offense, defense, special teams, got to be playing at the highest level to right away, because New England's going to come out quick. And if you let them get going, you know, that offense was really, really difficult, if not impossible, to stop once they were flowing. So, you know, we started slow. And when you start slow against New England, that's what happens.
So you guys go to the playoffs that year at 11-5 and get a wild card matchup with Peyton Manning and the Colts, and they knocked you out in the AFC Championship in 2009. But this time around, you guys really dominate the game defensively. You're able to hold down their high-octane offense, and Mark Sanchez leads you guys down the field for a game-winning field goal at the end of regulation. What was the difference in maybe the preparation for facing Peyton Manning this time around to try to turn around the result that you had from the 2009 AFC Championship game?
Yeah, I think we were clearly, you know, the 2009 Championship game, we had surprised a lot of teams. And we were still really good and talented, but I think Indy the way they had played that year, they were still the better team in that AFC championship game the year before. I think we were clearly the better team that year. 2010, the Jets were just better than Peyton Manning and the Colts. And we showed that in that round. You know, I mean, it was obvious that we were the better team. And so there certainly was some extra motivation to get back at the AFC championship loss the year before. Obviously, it's nice when you get that opportunity to knock a team out that knocked you out the year before. But I think we were just the better team.
And we talked about it before. So you beat the Colts. You go to the AFC divisional playoffs. You get a rematch with the Patriots. Was there a sense of like, look, we're going to turn this around? Last time we got a little bit embarrassed by them. Nobody thinks we're going to beat these guys. So let's go out and show everybody that we can take down Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. We know how great they are, but there's no reason why we can't go out there and win this game in the divisional.
You know, if there was ever a loss that helped us, that made a difference, it was the Monday night loss. Because I guarantee you, no matter how good New England is at preparing for teams, I'm sure they underestimated us a little bit. And you know, with Rex at the helm, we weren't about to do that with them. And so we were pissed about the Monday night game. We were pissed about, how we performed. And we were going to make sure to show them that wasn't the Jets that you played against. So I think that there was certainly a mindset going to that game, like, all right, we're going to put it to them. We're going to show them what we're about. And it's great when you're the underdog and when people don't expect to get much out of you, right? Because even it's just human nature to let down a little bit. And so I think that was good to give New England that confidence that we did in that Monday night game and then come back in that divisional round and punch them in the teeth, you know. Again, probably the second greatest win in Jets history.
Connor Green joined here by Mike DeVito, former Jets defensive tackle. So you win that game against the Patriots. Then you go to Pittsburgh for the AFC championship game. You had beat them in the regular season already. And you come out in this game and it just gets off to a slow start. You guys fall behind 24-0 in the first half. And I think you guys really outplayed the Steelers in the second half, but ultimately just weren't able to pull yourself out of that deficit. After the game, was there a disappointment from the fact that you knew you could beat these guys because you had already done it on the road that year?
Yeah, this was definitely the most disappointing loss in my career. And I'll tell you why, Connor. I think one of the things, when I look back in my career, there's obviously a lot of plays that I say, ah, that was a bad play, and I hurt my team with that. And this game specifically is the worst play of my career. And so this was towards the end of the game, and our offense finally started going. Our defense finally started to get going into the second half. We're in the fourth quarter, and we're shutting them down, and our offense is scoring, and our offense is on fire. And so last offensive drive for Pittsburgh, they had the football, and it's third down, third and long, or fourth, I can't remember. I think it was third and long. And if we stop them, we get the ball back to our offense with one more chance to go down and score. And we go out there on this third down, and my job is just to rush up field and keep Ben Roethlisberger in the pocket. But I rushed up the field, and for 1 second I hesitated. And instead of keeping contained, I put my head inside. And that gave Roethlisberger just enough to roll out, get into the open field, and throw the pass, you know, in the flat to complete it and get the first down, and then that was it. And so that play has haunted me my entire life because, you know, since then. Because if I would have just stayed up the field and kept him in the pocket, you know, things could have been a lot different. And so I really let the team down with that one. And that's one of those ones that I have to live with forever, you know?
And that's still something you think about to this day?
Got to be every other day.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm naturally a more pessimistic person. I only remember bad plays, but I was going to say there's one that has haunted me forever. It's that one.
After the 2010 season, the Jets kind of ran into some salary cap problems. Some of the veteran guys they had to let go, and some of them retired as well. Did you get a sense that after that loss against the Steelers in 2010, that maybe the window on a championship had maybe closed for you guys?
Yeah, I did. I remember 2011 a little bit, and then definitely in 2012, when I looked at who we lost compared to who we brought in, I thought, you know what, we haven't done enough to keep this roster where it was. And obviously, when you're in a division, you play in New England twice a year, you need that 2010 Jets roster if you're going to be successful. And so when I looked, you know, 2011, I started thinking, you know what, I don't think we brought enough back. Now, I still think we were talented enough in 2011. I think that's when the internal stuff got going. And then 2012, definitely, I look back and say, wow, we do not have the roster to win in the AFC East and AFC, more generally AFC. I mean, we just didn't have the guys to do it.
Connor Green joined here by Mike DeVito, former defensive lineman for the New York Jets and a member of the 2010 Jets. I'll wrap up with this, Mike. I think one of the things that kept fans optimistic even after that 2010 season and the tough loss at the end of the year was the fact that Mark Sanchez had a lot of development in his first 2 years. And I think a lot of times he gets unfairly criticized for maybe not living up to some expectations that people had after the 2010 season because they didn't surround him with a ton of weapons. They changed offensive coordinators. And I think those sorts of things can be really tough if you're a young quarterback. But in your mind, why do you think Mark Sanchez never quite lived up to expectations in New York?
Yeah, I think the change in offense makes a big difference. I think the change in personnel makes a big difference. Keeping the nucleus of the team the same is important, so people build continuity, they build friendships. So that's one of them. I think Peyton Manning or Eli Manning doesn't get enough credit for this, but playing quarterback in New York has got to be the hardest job in the NFL. I mean, New York has the greatest, most passionate fans, but they're going to let you know when things aren't going well. And it could be one quarter of things not going well, and you're going to hear it. And I grew up in a family full of New Yorkers, so I understand. I get it. But as a quarterback especially, you got to have thick skin. And I just wonder sometimes if some of that stuff got to Mark. And I wonder if the Jets did too much to shelter him from it when it really didn't help him to do that. He needed to get, you know, especially right away in his early in his career, get used to the media and get used to playing in New York. And I think they tried to shelter him for a long time, and that ended up coming back to bite him when things weren't going well, and maybe getting his head a little bit. Because you saw what Mark can do when he was on fire, when he was confident and going.
Mike DeVito, defensive lineman on the 2010 Jets, a team that was not quite able to win the Super Bowl, but had a really entertaining season, multiple wins at the end of regulation, multiple overtime wins. You beat Peyton Manning and Tom Brady on the road in the playoffs. It's definitely a year I'll never forget as a Jets fan. And, Mike, thanks so much again for coming on with me to relive it.
Connor, this is great, man. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
So there you go, guys. Mike DeVito, 2010 Jets.
Wow. Wow, 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 wow. Wow, I got to get to Bogus right now because of timing purposes, but I could spend an hour on that interview. That was phenomenal. That was phenomenal. Mike DeVito just told us the Jets were overly protective of Mark Sanchez, which made him overly sensitive, which crushed him. Wow. Haunted plays that haunt him every day from that game. That was all so insightful. That was the best team ever we've had. Wow, Connor just crushed it. Man, Andrew Bogus has our headlines this morning. Bogues, good morning. Follow that up.
Does Connor want to do this as well? I could much like to just go home at this point. Tiger Woods, Peyton Manning, Phil Mickelson, Tom Brady pledged $10 million for COVID-19 relief efforts, then raised another $10 million playing golf yesterday in Florida. Mother Nature gave them a few breaks from steady rain. Brady made the shot of the day, sinking a wedge from the fairway for a birdie on 7. That earned $100,000 from Brooks Koepka. Brad Keselowski won last night's NASCAR Coca-Cola 600 in Charlotte. Jimmy Johnson finished second at first.
Very proud of the effort we're putting in, but man, second stinks. It's tough being this close to victory lane, but we're knocking on the door and we'll get there.
Johnson speaking post-race on Fox. Shortly thereafter, his car failed inspection, so he was dropped from second to last. Either way, extending his winless drought to 102 races, Johnson's crew chief says something might have broken during the race, causing the rear alignment to fail that inspection. They can appeal. The Washington Nationals showed off their World Series rings last night. They average 170 diamonds, 55 rubies, and 32 sapphires. And Michigan president Dr. Mark Schlissel told the Wall Street Journal he can't see the Wolverines playing sports this fall if the entire student body isn't allowed on campus. Schlissel, by the way, is a doctor of immunology. DA, back to you.
Thank you, Bogues. When we come back, we dive into so much of the goodness that was inside that Mike DeVito interview. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Come one, come all, step inside. It's this date in mothership history.
We go from one insightful interview to a date in infamy. 2 years ago, Meraz called Bilotti ugly. This is your date in mothership history.
The one girl who we thought might have been is now pot committed. She came in and asked Bilotti if we found the girl that ordered the sandwich in front of him and then said, oh, wait, no, it was you. You guys look like twins. Which then caused another catastrophic event in the newsroom yesterday where apparently people think me and Pete look like each other because we're bald.
This young woman comes into the newsroom. She is all, now she's totally in on this saga of finding one of her coworkers because she can't believe any of her peers would have the gall or the sass to say to Meraz, yeah, you like that big boy, and wink. Nobody can believe this, and she couldn't. So she comes back in trying to help us figure out who this was and then talks to Bilotti and then realizes, no, Bilotti wasn't Meraz, and then turns to Meraz. So she doesn't know whether Bilotti's Meraz or Meraz is Bilotti. At this point, both Meraz and Bilotti are both offended.
I like Pete. I love him as a good person. And I'm not trying to say I'm Brad Pitt, but let's be honest. Pete Bilotti is an ugly human being.
Oh, that's terrible.
And to call us twins is so beyond unfair. Pete, you're just not a good-looking guy, and that's fine. You have a good heart, a heart of gold. You're just not handsome. I'm at least handsome.
Yeah, it's coming from Calvin Klein over here. Enough. I look better than you.
I mean, that's just so unfair. To call us twins because we're both bald. We don't look anything alike. And again, Pete's done well for himself. You know, good heart of gold. But again, ugly, handsome. I mean, there's a difference there. Not twins.
It's complete garbage as far as I'm concerned.
How do you feel about Meraz calling you ugly?
Well, he's known to lie and to embellish. So I'm
This ain't a lie.
I really don't put much weight into it.
Okay.
So I know how I look, and I look great. So, and Bogus said the same thing, too. So he's
Bogus
gonna come
said
in
you look great?
Yeah, he says,
You're the more handsome?
I have the better argument than Meraz.
He looks like Tommy Bahama met a slob. How does he look great?
After the woman said this, that they were twins, Mike Samter said who should be insulted by being compared to the other.
Mike Samter is the producer of Tiki and Tierney.
Correct. And my reflexive response was, Sean should be insulted that he's been brought down to Pete's level. But then Pete reminded me that he's about to marry a second woman.
Yeah.
So in a simple math 2-to-1 equation...
You want me to divorce Danielle right now? I'll get a chick in a second.
Oh, really?
No, I'm just kidding. Don't put that in the video later on Facebook.
The best part about this is we're following along the storyline from 2 years ago of Chicken Pesto Lady. This all happened because this was the after effect of trying to find the you like that big boy woman. That really got Pete very upset at you. I don't think he's ever really gotten over or forgiven you for calling him, quote, ugly to his face.
Yeah, and I distinctly remember there being conversations after the show from both you and Bogus going, should you have gone there with Pete? Like, really gone there? And I also say to this day, people say everything they want to say about me. I think Pete was ultra sensitive there, and I think it's okay to admit that Pete's just not a good-looking guy. Like, there's nothing wrong with saying that. So, I mean, yes, we don't look alike. I'm not Brad Pitt, but I'm better looking than Pete.
I would agree that you guys do not look alike. That's a little unfair that somebody would say that you guys look like twins.
Right. Exactly. People do that to bald people all the time, and it's not fair.
And interestingly, you guys don't really have the same body type either.
No, we've often said this. Look, I am husky. I'm an athletic husky. He's a bag of pudding. There's a big difference.
Oh, come on. He's going to come back and want to kill you even more tomorrow.
No question.
So this is a devastating moment for you here on the show. We just had Connor Green host Best Team Ever, Mike DeVito, who was a pass rusher on that team, on that great defense of the Jets. And not only was Connor polished and focused and ran a great interview, but Mike DeVito gave us major juice. I mean, DeVito talking about a play that haunts him every other day, still a decade later, that he missed where he put his head on one pass rush against the Steelers in the fourth quarter, which allowed them to complete a pass to extend the drive and salt away the win is a great, insightful moment from an athlete saying, I made a mistake and it haunts me every day. That's an incredible moment into itself. But then Connor sets him up with the question of all questions. Why didn't Mark Sanchez turn out to be a star? And DeVito blamed the organization. They put kid gloves on him. They tried to protect him too much. It ruined him. He was too sensitive, which is major juice and has got to make you wonder, Mraz, did Connor Green in one interview end up nudging past you on the food chain?
Look, we've known this moment was coming and this day was coming for a long time. And honestly, the last 20 minutes going from Connor's polished interview to me calling Pete ugly is pretty much a microcosm of my career and should really let you know that there's a real gamble to be placed. Maybe my stock continues to rise. Maybe I plummet. I don't know the answer to that question, but I will say this. Just 2 years ago, Connor Green had me listening to demos of him as a young broadcaster, part-timer, entering this field. And I thought he was good, and I gave him some pointers. 2 years later, Connor has no business ever sending me a demo again. Like, not a lick of business. I mean, I'm asking Jesse Armstead about Jason Seward's pants falling down, and he's getting a great Sanchez quote out of Mike DeVito. We've jumped the shark here, and Connor's time is now. If anybody in management's listening, kid deserves a shot. I'm a disaster. This sucks.
You've got a lot to think about today over burgers and mac and cheese bites.
I do. On one hand, I'm like, all right, good for me. Showing up Memorial Day, let's keep working. The other hand, I'm like, wow, I just got embarrassed today. I absolutely was embarrassed today because we kept making, oh, Connor's a rising star. Connor just had maybe our best interview we've had since Oakley, and he did it all on himself, booked it, interviewed, laid out the questions. I'm lucky I do one of those three things right. It's unbelievable. I'm proud of Connor because I love him. Like, I look at him like a younger brother in this business, but he's better than me at this. And that's, like, it's a real humbling moment. It is.
Quote, he's better than me at this.
He is.
At this radio thing.
He is. I need to understand that I'm not going to be better than everybody, and I'm not going to be better than Connor, and look, I'm going to be visiting his mansion at some point, and that's it.
Like, Connor booked the guest, interviewed the guest.
Right.
Edited the guest, ran it, and is running the board today, yep. And will probably get headlines from CBSSports.com exactly. Because of his interview.
Ask me who I've booked the rest of the week, because the answer is like, I got no idea. I don't know what we're doing.
We might run back Jared Greenberg again because he said he had a lot of time.
Look, not for nothing. If Connor ends up owning like three horses and going to the Kentucky Derby one day, we're going to look back on the day he interviewed Mike DeVito and realize, oh, okay, that's why I'm still here. Right, okay.
Today is definitely a this date in mothership history in 2025. Yes. Where Connor has moved on. To be a national broadcaster, right. And we remember the date it all pivoted, his Mike DeVito interview, where DeVito admitted that Mark Sanchez was babied by the Jets and ruined by the organization.
And Connor blows off my text messages as I try to book him on a
yeah,
show.
Right, yeah. Connor's the next Ian Eagle or Jim Nantz. We're like, come on, you just got to aunt. We're the same family, man. I know you're calling NFL playoff games here, but come on, we're in CBS.
Right. We gave you that opportunity. Forget that.
No, Ian actually always responds, but Nantz is a tough one, and Romo never responds.
But, I mean, maybe Connor's going to be next to Romo at some point. Honestly, Connor should be in the Monday Night Football booth.
That's true. You know, if I had a Connor Lewis Riddick Monday Night booth, I might be into it.
Yeah, you know what? You sign me up. That's much watch every week. Get Susie on the sidelines, and away we go.
So great also to have polished Connor go from a great interview into this date mothership history. Pete, Mraz calls Pete ugly.
But that's all I got. If I'm not calling somebody ugly or talking about the Magna Carta, what do I have left after listening to Connor do that interview? Why would anybody, any radio programmer, agency, why would anybody buy stock in me if it wasn't for the jokes to listen to Connor? If you played back Connor's interview and played anything I've said in the air for the last 2 months, you're going to say, oh, Connor's a slam dunk star. I don't know about this fat slop. And I have to come to grips with that. It's something I have to come to grips with this morning.
Connor is better than me at this.
Yes. I'm going to be humble. Yeah, cataclysmic. Cataclysmic? I can't even say words.
Oh, that's a great pivot. Oh, man, that was good. All right, coming up here on the DA Show next, we have sports, we have the return of sports, and we have looking back on sports. And Michael apparently screwed Pat Riley out of a suite, and we take umbrage to this coming up next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.